Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining us from Boston is Jackie McMullen, who I saw last week in Los Angeles. It was lovely to see you, Jackie. But you're
so
back
fun.
Home in the cold.
It really was. Yes, I am. Temporarily.
I am in Minneapolis tonight, today, which is, we're recording this Wednesday morning. Gonna see the Jazz play, the Timberwolves tonight. And attending tonight's Mavericks-Warriors game, big national TV tilt, lots of attention focused on that one, is Unbanned McMahon in Dallas. Hello, Tim.
Howdy, partners.
Tim wrote a very nice story on Doncic and Carlisle, by the way. Can I just give him a little plug? Because that was a really cool story.
Well, I appreciate that,
I didn't see it. I didn't see it.
Well, that's because you're hogging the top spot on our NBA page right now, and I'm right below you. I know you never scroll past your own work. My goodness.
I'll check it out.
Give Wendy all the glory.
Well, Doncic is something we'll be talking about. So I didn't watch a heck of a lot of, I have to just admit, I didn't happen to see a lot of the game with Carmelo last night. I was happy he didn't get hurt. And please tell me if I'm insane here. Regardless of Melo's impact on the Blazers and what he can do in the modern NBA, let's just set that aside. Am I crazy to think that the Trailblazers were acting irrationally? They sign the guy, and he puts out on a video. He put out his own video that he released, I think, in the last 48 hours. He's like, listen, I wasn't ready to play right away. I wasn't mentally ready, so I needed to take the weekend to get mentally ready. I'm like, okay.
But not go to
Houston. They didn't work him. I know. They didn't work him out, as far as I know. They didn't work him out. Damian Lillard said they had
a shoot-around. But the,
Of a back-to-back. No. Before they signed him. They signed him, they didn't work him out, okay?
On Instagram.
I mean, are they really relying on Instagram video? So they didn't work him out, all right? Damian Lillard said on the record that he and Melo talked briefly, but they didn't talk about, like, what his role was going to be. They have him skip Houston. Okay, they want to protect him. That's fine. They immediately bring him in. He has not played in a year. No training camp. They haven't even seen him work out. I guess they take his word. They don't even have a shoot-around because it's the second night of a back-to-back. So the coaches, like, walk through some plays with him in the hotel. They immediately start him and play him 24 minutes.
And then Melo post-game talks about they were transparent with his role. He made it sound like they promised him he'd be a starter and kind of said, you know, I appreciate them being transparent with the role. Basically said that the Thunder and the Rockets weren't, which you'd get disagreements from both of those franchises on that, by the way. And then said that the transparency with his role was a big reason for his decision. Well, that and the fact that there was only one NBA team that had any interest.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and then, so with all that, Terry Stotts has asked, hey, is he going to start? And he goes, I don't see why not. Jackie, am I out of my mind?
He said that pregame. After watching the game, there's a few reasons why not, Terry.
Well, but Jackie, again, let's just forget about what Melo can actually do. What are they doing? I'm just impressed he didn't pop a hamstring or tear a groin muscle. He hadn't played in a year.
I know. And these are valid points. But so the word everyone has used for Portland, and it's an apt one, is desperate. They are desperate. This is not the start to the season that they ever envisioned, even though Nurkic is out. Zach Collins is out. That's where it all the troubles start. And listen, Melo's contract it's not guaranteed until January 7th. You take a flyer on this guy. I don't know if he can be, but he was a professional scorer. I think we all forget that he really can fill it up. I don't know if he can do that right away. Your point about not being in condition and all that is fine. I get that. Defensively, he's clearly not going to help them. I mean, teams are just going to run pick and roll against him all day, all night. But it's a gamble that doesn't cost you anything if it doesn't work out. And they needed to do something. And, you know, if you want it, we can go back and dissect why Al Farouq Aminu isn't on this team anymore, why Jake Layman isn't on this team anymore, how well Mo Harkless is doing for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. We could do that too. But this is desperation. That's what this is. And in the end, if it doesn't work out, it's really not going to cost you. And one thing everyone forgets about Melo, and it gets a bad rap, and I get why, because it hasn't worked out the last two times. He's one of the most well-liked players in the league. Players love him. They really do. They want this to work. And he's a guy that they trust and believe in. And that matters in this league.
Yeah, players especially love him when he's guarding them.
No, I get that. I get all of that. I'm just, you asked me why this happened, and I'm telling you why. It's an act of desperation, and before January 7th, at any time, they can pull the plug.
Yeah, his financial guarantees his jersey number.
Exactly.
That's true. I saw the reports. He's getting 15,000. He's getting 15,000 a day. So when you talk to league executives, they'll say that the G League has kind of been, because of the two-way contracts, has kind of been mind clear of you know, NBA-ready prospects. So, you know, Jackie talks about them being desperate, McMahon. Not that you would go down and find somebody in the G League that was going to take the Blazers back to, you know, above 500. But one of the reasons why there's not that many options is even if they wanted to go get a young player, if they don't have them on their roster, there's only a handful of guys in the G League right now who are not on two-way contracts who are NBA-ready, according to people I've talked to. So I understand the desperation, and I'm like, go ahead and try it. I'm fine with that. I'm just more plug and play right off the bat. Hasn't played in a year. Just go out there and run around. Jeez, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to work. I understand why they did it. They're in a really bad way, and they're playing, you know, Mario Hezonja a lot of minutes. I mean, that's the kind of spot that they're in right now. But I agree with you. You put them in a bad spot last night. But, you know, it was really like what we saw from Melo last night was a continuation of what we saw from Melo during his little brief stint in Houston, what we saw from Melo at the tail end in Oklahoma City. Like, yeah, single game plus minus is not the best stat, but this is Melo is consistently by far the worst plus minus guy on his team, and that's not going to change in Portland. If Melo's the solution, you've got major problems, and Portland absolutely does.
That's true. And Lillard missed a game.
Which, again, yeah, and Lillard missed a game, but Lillard's banged up right now, and it's not a surprise when you look at how many minutes he's played, and that's maybe the scariest thing for the Blazers is Damian Lillard has been, for the most part, spectacular, and you're still way out of things in the West
and
already.
He's leading the league in minutes and now already suffering injuries. And that's – so the Blazers are facing a crisis with their season. Guys, where are the Spurs at right now?
Right down by the Blazers.
They have played one of the easiest schedules in the league. And then look, when you're playing in the West, it's not – there's nothing that's super easy. But of the West teams, they've played one of the easiest schedules. I think they've lost six in a row.
Ties the longest losing streak of the Pop era.
It's crazy.
And offensively, they're in the Stone Ages because their two go-to guys are, you know, kind of 90s throwback type of players. I mean, they're mid-range assassins in a league where that's, you know, pretty much a dying breed.
So what should they do?
They're 27th in defensive efficiency. Yeah, they're defensively. This is the part that I just am surprised. But you look, it comes back to LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. When you put them on the floor together, they have a net rating of minus 5.3. This is just, it's a problem. So
yeah,
what do you want to do? You want to move those guys?
And that's the question. It's a problem, but do those guys have significant value? Especially, you know, with the contracts that you know, the dollar figures that they have, you know, can you get back good value if you move DeRozan or Aldridge, or is it just kind of is it time for the Spurs to hit the reset button? You know, after a 22-year run of making the playoffs, which is absolutely ridiculous, and then does Pop want any part of a rebuilding process? You know, if they decide to rebuild, they've at least got one piece to build around. I mean, DeJounte Murray, it's a little bit hit and miss right now because, you know, coming off the knee, blah, blah, blah. But he's going to be a really good player.
other than that, like, they just don't have a lot of pieces right now that make you optimistic that this thing can get, you know, can get back on the right track within a few years.
Yeah, just, you know, you lose Danny Green, Kyle Anderson, say what you want. Defensively, I thought Murray and Derek White, I thought together that was really going to be a pit bull defensive pairing. It's just not. It's just not. And you're right about Murray. You have to give
DeRozan,
him time. You got to give him time.
So the thing about DeRozan is he can opt out of his contract at the end of the season. Whether he will or not, I don't know. You know, it depends. It's not going to be a robust free agent market. His statistics are good. I mean, he's averaging 21 points. He's shooting 52% from the field. Obviously, he's not strong defensively. He never has been. In a market where there's not a lot of free agents, there's a possibility that he could be pretty valuable. And he could want to also guarantee himself multiple years. So I think he could opt out. The Spurs talked to him about an extension. They could still extend at any time. He doesn't have a restriction on when he can extend. But I think that's unlikely because they didn't do a deal already, and it's not working with him. So if they trade him, you know, is there value, Jackie, for a DeMar DeRozan trade? Should the Spurs seriously consider that?
Well, they should consider, but I don't know what kind of trade value there is. What the heck is that? What is going on?
I accidentally played a highlight. My computer volume was up. My bad.
This is Tim.
Not a highlight. I clicked on DeMar DeRozan's 3-point attempts this year, and so it's on NBA stats. He's tried 4 3-pointers this year. 4. He has not hit a 3-pointer since before the All-Star break last season. And I just, like, is there value in today's NBA for a go-to wing scorer who just doesn't shoot threes whatsoever? It just, the challenges that puts on a team's spacing. I mean, even though he still gets his own, I mean, he can, you know, he's a mid-range guy. He can get to the bucket. He just had 36 against the Mavericks. But, man, it's, like I said, he really, it's
I don't
just,
know. Honestly, I think their biggest problem is Aldridge. I really do. His defensive drop-off, if you look at the splits with Jakob Poeltl on the floor as opposed to Aldridge, they're pretty stunning. I don't know if Aldridge has gotten old overnight or what. Maybe, I don't really know. But he's,
boy, if DeMarcus Aldridge is old, that makes me ancient because I covered him in high school.
I'm just telling you, though, if you, I don't know how much you guys have watched him play, but teams are going right to the rim against LaMarcus Aldridge.
They're actually a better
defensive team when Jakob is in there.
And the other thing about LaMarcus is he is so up and down offensively. And going back to last year, when he scores 20-plus, they're still a really good team. They were like 37-10 last year. I think he's got 20-plus in all their wins this year. When he doesn't, they're terrible. And his wins-loss, he's averaging 25 on 59% shooting when they win, less than 15 on 47% shooting when they lose. It's because they have to be a really good offensive team since they're, you know, pretty bad defensively. And LaMarcus is so in, like, there's nights where he's still got it, but he is so inconsistent right now. And they need him to have all-star level production to win. And those, you know, it happens sometimes, but it happens right now about one every few games. And so they win about one every few games.
Was this just never a good fit, LaMarcus Aldridge and the Spurs? Am I the only one that thinks that? Just never felt right to me.
It was awkward at best.
He was a top free agent on the market. It was like at the time they had Kawhi, and it was like an opportunity for the Spurs to play in free agency. They had never done that before. It was a guy saying, "I want to trust the back end of my prime to the Spurs because they'll handle me right." And then he and Pop immediately got off to the wrong foot. They ended up, LaMarcus asked for a trade. But they eventually, you know, mended over. But, you know, really what this looks like to me is the Spurs were primed to remain super competitive because of Kawhi Leonard. When Kawhi Leonard went sideways, they've sort of held the dam from bursting because LaMarcus had some good games. They had a good couple of player acquisitions that helped them. And DeRozan sort of helped hold the line. But now that they just have no margin for error, especially in the West. And now it may be time. It may be time to just pull it. And it's a big decision for them. But
well, and in fairness to them, Brian, your point is a good one. Kawhi Leonard going sideways. You never can plan for that. How can you plan for that? He's your generational player. He's your next franchise centerpiece that you're pretty sure you're going to have forever. And then in one of the most bizarre, you know, sagas we've had over the last 3 years, Kawhi Leonard is history. He's gone. Nothing you can do will convince him to stay. I mean, it's hard to plan for that.
So Om Youngmasik wrote a story about Paul George and Kawhi Leonard all, you know, wanting to play together and how it was destiny. I think they're going to play their first game tonight against the Celtics. And he brings up a story that it was out there a little bit in 2017, the summer of 2017, never really got traction, but he brings it back and confirms it. That shortly after Paul George asked for a trade in time and place, this is the summer of 2017, June 2017, Woj breaks the news that Paul has informed the Pacers he will not re-sign with them and he asked for a trade. Om reports, and again, it was reported at the time, but it sort of just went away. Paul George initially asked to be sent to the Spurs to play with, to play with Kawhi. Says that that the two teams did talk and that the Spurs didn't have the package. Now, I'm going to tell you who they had on their roster. I mean, there could have been picks obviously involved, but you were looking at LaMarcus was their best player. They still had Kyle Anderson, Patty Mills, Danny Green, Pau Gasol was still, you know, still playing somewhat. You know, Davis Bertans could have been in that deal, but you didn't have the kind of young centerpiece player.
You didn't have Victor Oladipo. You didn't have you didn't have Domantas Sabonis. I mean, the Pacers obviously ended up with two really good players, young players, out of that deal.
Yeah, and draft picks aren't really that valuable from the Spurs because they're never any good. And
now they will
as
be.
It turned out, the Pacers didn't want draft picks because they, you know, the Pacers didn't want to sink to the bottom. They ended up moving George for draft picks. The funny thing about, not funny, but the sort of sad thing is the following season was the year that Kawhi only played 9 games. So that injury, even if they had somehow been able to pull it off, they wouldn't have been able to really play together probably anyway. But it is a pretty fascinating what if. Jackie, off the top of your head, could you even think of a place that would want Aldridge or DeRozan? Like, is there a good fit? I mean, I haven't really thought about it, but
I haven't either. And you know, so what I guess we need to say is these defensive deficiencies that the Spurs are experiencing with Aldridge on the floor, is this a trend of a guy who's just on the downside of his career, or is there something else at work? And this is, it's still a small sample size. We're only 1 month into the season. I guess that's what I would say. And
I mean,
the
Knicks are bringing in DeRozan fits with the cockamamie thing that they're doing, which is allegedly trying to compete right now, but having guys on short contracts. That actually fits.
Bringing in Aldridge. Bringing in Aldridge fits for the Knicks too, because he plays a lot of power forward, and they love those power forwards.
Right.
Stack up as many as you can.
Oh, my man.
Actually,
LaMarcus back to Portland. LaMarcus back to Portland. If it's like Whiteside and a pick, that might make some sense.
It was funny. I was thinking.
Remember a couple of years ago when he wanted out of San Antonio, he was, I think he talked about it publicly that he'd basically, you know, gotten with Dame and said, hey, sorry, man, I shouldn't have left.
Well, but he's, I don't know.
Go ahead,
Jackie. Don't think so. I just don't see how Portland goes back. That's going backwards if you're Portland. That's not your solution. I told you, man.
Yeah,
Hassan Whiteside. Oof. He's the cooler. I told you this, man. He's the cooler. Wherever he goes, things go bad. Just saying.
Well, at least they brought in Melo to heat things up.
There you go.
Yeah, although the Knicks and Spurs, I would not say, I doubt there's a whole lot of positive communication between those two franchises
good point.
Right now after the Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
Scenario.
You know, I wonder if DeRozan,
McMahon,
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I wonder if DeRozan can kind of redefine himself as a bucket-getting sixth man type of guy for a contender. Because I really think that's what he is at this point.
Hello. No one is available to take your call.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, did you know that your skin, hair, nails, and connective tissues are all made from collagen? I did not know that. I am learning about this myself. And generally speaking, once you turn 30, your body naturally slows down in this production of collagen. A standard modern diet typically doesn't help either, since it lacks in collagen. I don't even know what foods have collagen in them, to be honest with you. That's why collagen supplementation is so popular in the wellness and beauty community, and that's why you could use Ancient Nutrition's multi-collagen protein. Ancient Nutrition's multi-collagen protein supports healthy skin, joint health, a healthy gut, and healthy nails. Plus, instead of one or two collagen types, Ancient Nutrition's multi-collagen protein features five collagen types. That's why, by the way, they call it multi-collagen. How about that? It's just a flavorless powder that you could take in a glass of water. You can put it in your coffee. It's made from four different food sources: beef, chicken, fish, and eggshell membrane. All from non-GMO, pasture-raised, cage-free, and cruelty-free sources. And it contains 9 grams of protein and 0 grams of carbs or fat. There are a lot of different options out there, especially because right now collagen is trending. So stick with Ancient Nutrition's multi-collagen protein, the one multi-collagen protein praised by Better Nutrition, Women's Health, and so many more. Right now, if you want to try this product, you can get $10 off. You go to ancientnutrition.com and use the promo code HOOP. That's H-O-O-P. It's a special offer for our listeners and a simple way you can support the show. $10 off at ancientnutrition.com using promo code HOOP. That's ancientnutrition.com, promo code HOOP. You know who could actually really use DeMar DeRozan? And I don't see them actually going this route because I think they're fine. But you know who really could use him? This is going to sound crazy. The Clippers. The Clippers, one of the things that has become obvious to me is they may have issues scoring at times.
Hold on, though.
They're going to...
Can Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, two guys who can get 30 any given night, actually play a game together before we talk about the problem scoring?
Okay. All right.
Now, Kawhi's knee, they can downplay that all they want. There's a concern there. And, you know, talking to people who from other teams who have seen him, because they're saying now... Well, he bumped it, I guess, in Houston is what they're saying. And so it's just, you know, it's been a day-to-day thing, no concern. I'll be honest, I talked to some people with the Rockets, and I said, hey, he couldn't go right. He was really struggling to go right because he couldn't push off that thing, all game long, not just after he supposedly bumped it. And, like, he noticeably lacks lift. So, you know, and remember, the league office wanted to make sure everybody knew, hey, no, there's a real issue with this guy's knee that the Clippers just didn't want to put out there. So that there is some concern there for sure.
It's just weird, right?
Yeah,
it's weird.
I'm a little bit worried about their scoring. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I will say this. Paul George, though, he comes straight out of, you know, rehab, injury rehab, and lights it on fire. Like, there is no rust, no ramp up. He just comes in 30-plus, 37, 21 minutes. I just think if they can manage that and he's healthy, if you have Kawhi, you have Paul George, and your second unit has arguably the two best bench scorers in the league with Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell running pick and roll, I just think the offense is going to be A-OK there.
Well, I don't know. I'm telling you, they don't have many creators.
I just named...
Well, you're right about that. No, but he's right about that. Like, guys that can take the ball off the dribble.
Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Lou Williams.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many teams that have...
That's it.
Well, that... Okay. Tell me teams that have three guys like that. There ain't many.
Okay. You're maybe right. Maybe I'm talking out of the side of my neck. I'm just telling you, they're winning games like 90 to 88.
Well, that's because they don't have their full team, though. The two guys haven't played together yet. I mean, Tim's right. Why should we even go here till we see how they? But I think the biggest takeaway of this is the idea, because I've been asking around too, like, is this a Kawhi Leonard secret, double secret probation load management, or should the Clippers be concerned about the health of this guy that they just gave up, like, their entire future for?
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I sat there and listened to Doc Rivers, and also Kawhi has said the same thing before this, that he's never felt better, never felt healthier. So, like,
Doc would never fib. Doc would never fib in front of a microphone. Well, are you kidding me?
I know. I'm just saying, but the actions of the league
tell us that they weren't being truthful, because the reason the league signed off on this was because that he had a legitimate something going on. Now, I don't know how serious it is. I really don't. I'm just saying that. Talk about a fly in the ointment if this is, like, never mind load management. This is actually a reoccurring, nagging injury that's going to be a problem all year. Now, maybe Kawhi doesn't care. Maybe Kawhi is so smart that he realizes, you know what, this thing is never going to be 100% right. So I am going to take 3 games off to get this better. And then guess what? When the playoffs come, I'll do exactly what I did last year. I'll be gangbusters. I'll be rested. Yes, I'll play through pain, and I'll still win anyway. In which case, all the power to him. He knows his body a lot better than the 3 of us do.
That's fine. I'm just saying, but when you come out and say he's never felt better, even if that's a lie, that implies something. So, I mean, that's all I was reacting to. Staying in Texas, my fellow Ohio in Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, and Jeff Passan, who covers baseball for ESPN, has been reporting really, really well on this Houston Astros sign-stealing thing where they were using a camera, it appears, and they would signal to the guy in the batter's box whether there was a curveball coming or a changeup coming or whatever. And I was thinking about this.
Can.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. This sign stealing and knowing what play is coming, and I realized that knowing what pick and roll is coming is different than knowing whether a slider or a changeup is coming. I understand that. Sign stealing is absolutely run-of-the-mill routine operation in the NBA. And using video to sign steal is routine in the NBA. Especially when you get into but if this happens in the regular season too, the advanced scouts come to the games, and if their seats aren't good enough, sometimes their team will just buy them a courtside seat. They steal all the teams, every team does it. They steal all the team's play calls, and you see a coach signal play, and an assistant coach stands up and yells exactly what play is coming. In fact, sometimes it's so sophisticated that the assistant coach will yell let's say on one team a play is called rub 24, and on the other team it's called whatever, they'll shout their verbiage for the play. So in other words, they'll put it, in their own language. Like, they'll translate it and put it in their own language so the players know exactly what play is coming because they run it themselves. This is just common, Jackie, in the NBA, and it's no big deal, which is why I sort of find it interesting that it's like this potential major scandal in baseball.
Yeah, but I think baseball's different. I'm not sure this is applicable because you're right. Teams called there's. In fact, I'm doing a story on this, on plays and who stole what play from whom and what they renamed it and why where they stole it from in the first place. And there's a play that Phil Jackson ran a million years ago that like 30 or I think 20 NBA teams still runs. So, but to me, you can add little wrinkles to that. You can call out a play. Slice and then run something else completely. Say, hey, we're going to call slice and we're going to run something else. I mean, that to me is different than using cameras. What's going on in the NBA is overt. Everyone acknowledges it. Everyone does it. And I don't even think there's a rule against it in terms of if you see a play you like. So that's the difference. I mean, what the Astros were doing was covert and against the rules of the MLB. So to me, it's not a great comparison.
Right. I don't know, though, because.
Like you said, in baseball, like you can't adjust
there's not a wrinkle off of your fastball. Your fastball is your fastball. Your curveball is your curve. Your chain, et cetera, et cetera. If you know what pitch is coming, that's a huge advantage. If you know what play is coming, there's all. I was actually talking to Rick Carlisle about play calling. You know, kind of in relation to his relationship with Luka Doncic and the story that I ran today. And his point is, play calling now is so different than it was 20 years ago. Because 20 years ago, you know, the play was the play. You were trying to get the ball to so and so in this spot to, you know, this post up or whatever. And now it's more about just, you know, creating playmaking opportunities, space, and you know, situations for guys to be in a position to make decisions. So it's different in that regard. And you know, it's funny that this is happening in Houston because the advanced scouts love scouting the Rockets. You know why? They don't call a single play. It's the easiest scout in the league. Mike D'Antoni doesn't call plays. Hey, James, do whatever you want to do. I trust you. That's all it is. James will either call for a pick or not. They don't call plays. And so, you know, the advanced scouts love getting the Rockets.
But one of the things that the teams do in the playoffs is they change their play calls or they hide their play calls because, or they like try to whisper it, or, you know, because if the other team is openly stealing your plays, it's on you to try to continue to hide them. I mean, that's the whole point of baseball, the third base coach changing his signals every now and then, because if you sit there and watch long enough, you'll probably be able to figure it out. The interesting thing, I think, about baseball, and there's a thousand differences between baseball and the NBA, I realize that. But in the NBA, it's hard to keep things quiet. Like, this apparently lasted several years, even though there were players who left the Astros organization, and ultimately, those are the guys who are coming forward now. But, like, conspiracy seems to work better in baseball than it would in the NBA because nobody would keep their mouth shut. They would just openly say what was going on.
Yeah, but Brian, here's the thing. And I was just talking to Steve Kerr about this when I was in LA last week. He has, I mean, I'm not going to guess. He didn't tell me the number, but he has, let's just say 85 plays that he has stored away somewhere that he saw who knows where, at an AAU game, at an NBA game, at a women's college game, at a WNBA game. And some of them that he's never used. And then Brad Stevens does the same thing. It was fascinating listening to him talking about it. And so what happens is, you know, like a few days before they're going to play a team, they pull it out because they're not going to teach all 85 plays to their players.
Of course.
So they
not.
Wait till 2 days before, they go over it, and they say, all right, let's spring this one. And people have never seen it before, allegedly. Or they're like, oh, wait, we know that play because we also stole it from the Stanford women's team. So, you know, there's every play can have a variation, and it becomes a different play. There's one play that that Kerr ran, and I'm forgetting now what he called it, but he called it whatever school he stole it from, like the Utes. And then, like, someone else ran it and called it the Wildcats. They just called it from wherever they stole it from. And so those plays can be changed and they can be tweaked. And so you like Stevens used to run that cross court pass. You mentioned it in your story about how Steve Kerr stole that play, that long pass play. Well, they have five different variations of that. So you think he's going to run that play, but then they do something else entirely.
But one of the reasons why teams score better out of timeouts is because they can go into a well of plays that are not as expected, that the other team doesn't know is coming.
Of course.
And right. I'm just saying that is just sign stealing and countermeasures are absolutely woven into the art of every single possession of the NBA game. It is just an absolute part of the NBA culture. And it's something that in baseball is now part of a scandal. And I'm just saying, it just shows the difference between the natures of the sports. Hey, this week on the Woj Pod, Adrian Wojnarowski speaks with Wizards guard Bradley Beal about his career evolution and some of the biggest lessons he's learned, going all the way back to his time with Billy Donovan at the University of Florida up until this very moment. If you like the Hoop Collective, of course you're going to like the Woj Pod too, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. We're listening to this podcast right now. And by the way, while you're consuming ESPN content, which we really appreciate, I'd be remiss if I wouldn't encourage all of you to check out Kevin Arnovitz's story on Jeff David, the Sacramento Kings executive who pilfered $13 million from the team. It's a fascinating story. You won't really read anything like it on the NBA probably anytime this year. So check that out on ESPN.com. McMahon, you mentioned the Rockets. The Rockets have a big game tonight in Denver. I think it's a big game. This is a potential playoff matchup. Rockets defense, we talked a little about this last week. Rockets defense has dramatically improved. They've gone from dead last to top five during this win streak. And like all of a sudden are now, I think they're 11-3.
Yeah, they got embarrassed in Miami. They got serious. You know, they got in shape, which, you know, D'Antoni kind of takes some of the blame for this. You try to take it easy on a veteran team during training camp, you know, and they had to kind of play their way into shape.
Well, they went to
James
Japan.
Harden. Yeah, went to Hawaii and Japan, et cetera, et cetera. They had some other issues during training camp, thanks, you know, to Daryl Morey's Twitter account, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, James Harden went from, you know, bad, you know, low light reel James Harden defense for the first however, you know, whatever, how many games that was, I think 3-3 start to, I mean, he's been locked in. I haven't looked at the defensive rating since, after the eighth game of their winning streak, but for the first seven games of their win streak, the guy's averaging 43 a game on offense and his defensive rating is 95.9, which would lead the league, for the season, you know, for a team. And it's not, look, I'm not sitting here saying James Harden's a defensive stopper. What I am saying though is, as they hide him in their scheme, he is taking his responsibility seriously. And what's crazy is, you know, the win in Miami was absolutely crazy. And some people ripped Harden for putting up 41 shots. Dude, Russ was resting on a back-to-back. Daniel House Jr., who's one of their best players, was out with a back injury. Eric Gordon, who's supposed to be their number three scorer, is out with, you know, for weeks because of knee surgery. Clint Capella had a concussion, didn't play in that. Four of their top six players were out. The only chance they had was Harden to have a, you know, Kobe-esque chuck fest. And he did. He put up 41 shots. It wasn't necessarily efficient, but they're plus 16 with him on the floor. Harden has been absolutely ridiculous. The guy has scored 36-plus every game of the win streak. And, you know, when he does that and they play defense, they're one of the best teams in the league.
And Jackie, the team they're playing tonight, the Nuggets, they got off to a sluggish start.
Very much.
Malone
so,
was all over Jokic. They've now won 6 of 7.
Right.
They did have a home loss to the Hawks in there that was odd. In fact,
yeah,
they've already
odd.
Had a couple of home losses this year. But they're starting to crank it up and starting to show why they were regarded as, I think they had some injury issues. They had some guys who were dinged up here and there. They sort of had a steady stream of them, but the Nuggets, starting to show their teeth a little bit.
Yeah. Well, their defense has straightened out a little bit. You know, they were, although the losses they have are just, it's kind of a weird thing, right? They gave up like 125, 120. That's not really what you expect from them, but they seem to settle in. And I was laughing, you know, we were talking about Jokic, I think, was it a couple of weeks ago or was it just last week? I can't remember. And we were talking about how much he was struggling and he's, you know, he's still only shooting 24% from behind the 3-point line, which is a major problem for those guys. But that, I just feel like that's going to settle out. And I think that's what we said about Jokic, that, you know, he's an elite player and he's going to settle in. And it appears that that might be happening.
The thing about Jokic is every single game, even when he's having a bad game, he does something that you go, wow.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. Yeah.
Most of the time it's passes, but he's so creative with his shots as well. One of the most unique players I've ever seen in my time covering the NBA. I mean, I don't even know who you could compare him to. I know people have compared him to Arvydas Sabonis because of his passing ability and because
right.
he's a sort of a bigger, slower moving guy.
I saw Sabonis so much more physical. Yeah. And Sabonis yeah. was much more physical. Much more physical. And honestly, I think Jokic, and this is saying something because Sabonis may be the greatest passing big man of all time. That's, you know, Bill Walton might disagree with me, but Jokic is, Sabonis was, in his prime, was like a killer. You know, there was never downtime. And I think that's what Jokic has to figure out. Like, I mean, I never remember Sabonis in the fourth, worrying about Sabonis having stamina in the fourth quarter to finish off a team. And that's still going to be the knock on Jokic till he proves us wrong.
Well, and of course, the shame with Sabonis is we didn't see pre-Achilles Sabonis in the NBA.
Right. I got to see him in Seoul in the Olympics, so I got to see some of his international play. He's really a great player.
Well,
I was going to say, I think he's taken the crown as the best passing big man ever. I mean, you know, you can say the statistics are inflated now, but if you look at assists per game, it's not close.
Yeah, he's still shooting the lowest percentage of his career. A couple years ago, I think his second season, he shot 58%. Now, okay, his role is a little more magnified now, but him shooting 45% overall, he's never shot less than 50% in a season. So, you know, they started slow, and if, again, I talked about this at the start of the season. If anybody saw him play in China, you would not be surprised. He started slow. In fact, a lot of stuff that happened in China has portended the NBA right. season. But they're cranking up, they have a real interest.
I was going to say, Brian, you know what, Brian? I think, too, when you're a team that goes from being a plucky underdog like it felt like they were all last year to a team that everybody's looking at and saying, hey, maybe they can win the West. A lot of young players on that roster. And they start pressing. I saw it a little bit last year with a young Boston Celtics team. And I think that's also something you need to consider. By the way, my boy Jamal Murray, he's off to a pretty good start. Just saying.
Yeah, he's having a really good season. And two big games for them this week. So Rockets tonight, Wednesday night, which is the, you know, pretty much two of the hottest teams in the league other than like the Lakers and Celtics. And then the Celtics come in on Friday as I think they close their West trip out in Denver. So two really good tests for the Rockets or for the Nuggets. I think we'll have a real good feel about where they are after these two games. All right. Well, McMahon, enjoy your big contest tonight. And the Warriors are coming off a win. Don't overlook them.
They're on a one-game win streak.
It's a big victory for them.
I feel so bad for them. I really do, man. It's just tough to really feel for them. I truly do.
I don't think there's a lot of sympathy for them around the league. I don't sense that.
Yeah, I get that. But
let me tell you why there's no sympathy for them. They're probably headed for a top five pick, and they're going to get Clay and Steph back. So,
but I just like the way they're handling stuff. Like, didn't you? I just kept expecting Jerrymond Green, and maybe it'll happen soon. Like to just one day just completely blow up because this is just beyond the pale, right? And so far, they're losing, they play hard, they go home, they come back. I don't know. That's not easy to do when you've come from the mountaintop.
The one thing I learned from Greg Popovich all these years is that nothing's ever wasted. Even if it's in a blowout, you don't waste these opportunities. And the Warriors are trying not to waste it. They're putting out a bunch of guys that are not competitive, but that doesn't mean that the guys that they are not developing, like Eric Paschal, won't pay off for them longer term. And so they're not wasting. All right, Jackie, thank you very much. Tim, thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.